This is Ozarks at Large. If you drive a car and you intend to leave that car somewhere, almost anywhere, around Dixon Street in Fayetteville, you'll be paying some money for that privilege. Paid parking along and near the busiest parts of the street debuted earlier this month, and yesterday some city officials talked about it.
We also have a second machine under the canopy, which is a credit card only machine, just to speed things up when we get a lot of people out from the show at the same time. That gives us a total of...
Yesterday afternoon, Sharon Waters of the Fayetteville Parking Management Division stood by what is called a full-service pay-on-foot machine. That's 21st century tech talk for a parking meter. This machine, under a small pavilion adjacent to the largest downtown parking lot, allows people to park in the lot due east of Walton Arts Center for 50 cents an hour a day or $1 per hour at night. Elsewhere around the entertainment district in Fayetteville are pay stations that let visitors pay for parking in certain numbered spaces along residential streets. The change in the parking atmosphere may seem primarily a Fayetteville issue, but consider that Walton Arts Center is the largest arts venue in Northwest Arkansas, and that parking downtown for Razorback football games brings people from around the state to Dixon Street, and you realize that plenty of people will be swiping debit cards and putting coins into pay machines. So we'll ask and answer a half dozen questions about this new paid parking process. Question number one. Say I'm coming to Fayetteville to see the big Broadway show at Walton Arts Center, and I'm driving from Bentonville. Can I reserve a parking space? Yes, you'll be able to do so with a reservation system beginning in October for an amount that might differ from night to night. For a particularly popular show night, you might pay $15 for a reserved space in one of the three gated lots around Walton Arts Center. Sharon Waters from the city's Parking Management Division says the reservation process begins online.
You print out a barcode that you've used your credit card and you've paid for that space. It prints you out a barcode, which you bring with you to one of the gated lots, one that you've reserved. And when you pull up to the gate, rather than pulling a ticket, there's a scanner where you scan your barcode and it will let you into the lot.
Now, you won't be reserving a specific space, just reserving the fact that you have a space. The machines are smart enough to count the reserved spaces and the spaces taken by those rolling the dice and not reserving a slot, and will not allow the lots to be oversold, according to Ms. Waters. $5 of the reserved fee goes to the city, the rest to Walton Arts Center.
And that's a funding mechanism for the Walton Arts Center, and they're promoting that reservation system and helping to market that, and that's going to be one of the funding sources for them to not only help us with the parking program, but for us to help the Walton Arts Center.
A bonus here for smartphone owners. You can download your reservation barcode to your iPhone or BlackBerry and pass the screen under the parking machines for confirmation. And there will only be a limited number of reservations available, fewer than 100 per designated night. If you don't take advantage of the reservation option, the most you'll pay for a night is $5. Question number two. Will the city lots cost money for parking for Razorback football games this fall? Yes, but no more than it would cost you to park in the middle of a Wednesday in, say, July. 50 cents an hour during the day, a buck an hour at night. But privately run lots around downtown can increase their prices as they wish.
City property, though, has to be set by ordinance. So 50 cents an hour during the day and the dollar hour at night will never change except by going before city council.
Question number three. What if I work at a restaurant around Dixon Street? Will I have to pay $5 a night just to work? No. Employees of businesses in the entertainment district should receive a coupon code for a 90% reduction in parking fees. The code will be delivered by email from the city once a month. Full-time employees can use that code up to 22 times a month.
Part-time employees get 11 uses per month. So a full-time employee could park 22 times in one day and use them all up if they moved around. Or if they come every other day, then they would obviously get them through the entire month. Whatever is unused will expire at the end of each month.
Employees will be able to choose from a limited number of on-street spaces in close proximity to where they work. Question number four. I ride a motorcycle, and that uses less space. Do I get a discount? Yes, you do. You get a 50% discount at specific motorcycle designations. And if you're traveling by bicycle or scooter, anything less than 70cc, the discount's even better. You park for free. And there will be bike racks installed in the lot at the south of Walton Arts Center and Grubbs Restaurant. Question number five, and this, some city officials say, is the most asked question after about 9 days of paid parking. If the screen on those solar-powered pay stations is dark, is the machine broken? No. To save power, the machines, just like your laptop, has a screensaver device. If the screen's blank, just look at the instruction number one below the screen.
All you need to do is, number one, press a key, any key. It will wake the machine up, and then you can follow the prompts.
Question number six. What if I decide to walk home or take a cab? Will there be a big fine waiting for me when I get to my car the next day? No. The city says parking rates are charged only until 2 a.m. and don't resume until 10 the next morning. So you can pick your car up before 10 and incur no additional rates. Okay, one more bonus question. Those city lots around Walton Arts Center used to be full by mid-morning with cars driven by students, faculty, and staff at the University of Arkansas. So far, for the past week and a half, those lots have had far fewer cars. Where are those former free parkers stashing their vehicles now?
Obviously, the numbers have gone down during the daytime. I don't know where the free park, the people that were parking here free have found free parking now. And if unless it's in after 5, we have lots of free parking in the downtown area. All of our public lots in the square area are all free in nights and after 5 and on the weekends. So. But I was down here every night last week and all the way through the weekend, and there were very few empty spots. Dixon Street, all the on-street spaces were full. The Walton Arts Center lot was full. The worst problem that we had was the machine jammed because it couldn't accept any more bills. It was so full. So that's a good problem to have. But the daytime has slowed down.
The answers to the questions were provided yesterday afternoon by Sharon Waters from the Fayetteville Parking Management Division during a short walking tour of the downtown Fayetteville area that now has paid parking. You can learn more about the rules at FayettevilleParking.com, and we have another set of questions and the answers at OzarksAtLarge.com. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. A state panel is recommending that the legislature increase funding for public schools by 2.5% in 2012 to offset an expected rise in inflation. The proposed funding measure comes at a time when the state's budget is strained by the weight of a troubled economy. Governor Mike Beebe's spokesman Matt DeCampbell says the panel's recommendations are preliminary.
Of course, there's the chance that number could change as well as it progresses through committees and as more information comes in. There's a lot that we're looking at right now throughout the whole state budget. And of course, education is first and foremost in the governor's mind, and adequacy is a very important part of that. And we'll see as the months go by and we get closer to session what we feel is going to be the right place to put that adequacy number.
The funding proposal now goes to the legislature's Education and Budget Committees for further evaluation. Meanwhile, Arkansas senators are asking for more federal money to be released to help low-income Arkansans pay high energy bills this summer. The LIHEAP program makes one-time payments to help families with heating or cooling bills. But one nonprofit administering the program in Arkansas ran out of funds earlier this month. Arkansas Senator Mark Pryor says in this summer's record-setting heat, more funds are needed.
Money goes to utilities, and it helps low-income people pay their bills. And in fact, it in a lot of cases just pays the bills for them outright or gives them a big discount on it. So the utilities like it, and it's really good for seniors and low-income folks. So I certainly hope we can get more right now, especially right now, considering that it is so hot outside in Arkansas.
Senator Pryor did not specify the amount he'd like the White House to release. Arkansas has received $36.4 million for the program so far this year. If you subscribe to HBO, you may have seen Josh Fox's feature documentary, Gasland, a critique about America's burgeoning shale gas drilling industry. The film first premiered at Sundance last January, where it took the 2010 Sundance Special Jury Prize. After its release on HBO this summer, Fox has appeared on Fresh Air, Talk of the Nation, and The Daily Show. He's also been the brunt of harsh criticism by the oil and gas industry, who refer to Gasland as a shockumentary. Since Sundance, Fox has hosted public viewings of his films in places where shale gas drilling is occurring, including Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich met with Josh Fox during his visit to Fayetteville earlier this month, and she brings us his story.
Creating a complex environmental documentary on shale gas drilling was likely the last thing that experimental New York film and theater director Josh Fox would have tackled. That is, until a drilling operation threatened his family's Pennsylvania watershed, and he started asking questions. Here's a cut from the film's opening montage.
Hi. My name is Josh Fox. Maybe I'll start at the beginning. This is Dick Cheney. Maybe I'll start at a different beginning. This is my house. It's in the middle of the woods.
Josh Fox does not start with Dick Cheney, architect of the Energy Policy Act of 2005, which exempted shale gas drilling from federal environmental regulatory oversight. Rather, his inquiry begins with how the new technology known as slick water hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, might affect the pretty creek flowing through his property, a query which tracks him to prolific shale gas plays across 34 states, including Pennsylvania, Colorado, Wyoming, Texas, and the Fayetteville Shale Preserve in Arkansas.
There are numerous deep shale gas basins in the United States which contain trillions of cubic feet of natural gas.
In fact, North America's natural gas supply is so plentiful it has been described recently by some experts as a virtual ocean of natural gas.
The film explains how industry views shale gas as a bridge fuel connecting us to some future energy grid. Oil industry giant Halliburton invented shale gas extraction technology in order to get at huge reservoirs of natural gas locked into rock formations thousands of feet underground. The process blasts water, sand, and tons of chemicals down into horizontal bores, cracking the shale, releasing methane up into the energy grid. The oil and gas industry says fracking is safe and harmless to the environment, but Josh Fox alleges he found the opposite, exemplified by a half dozen clips of flaming tap water filmed in homes on top of shale gas plays.
Don't drink this water.
In his travels, Fox tapes cowboys, school bus drivers, and grandmothers who claim fracking has polluted their homes and made them sick.
The only reason why this is economically viable is because these companies were made exempt from our basic environmental laws. You and I could go make an enormous amount of money if we were given carte blanche to trash the environment. And that's exactly what's happened. If the gas companies had to pay for all the things that they're destroying, they would never be doing this.
5 years ago, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency found natural gas hydraulic fracturing to be safe. But in March, the agency launched a new two-year study on the potential adverse impact it may have on water quality and public health. Three regional public meetings with concerned citizens were held this summer. A fourth is planned in New York this fall.
We have people all over the United States saying, oh, look, before the gas drilling happened, our water was fine. We weren't sick. Our air was fine. After the gas drilling happened, our entire place was taken over. We've industrialized our town, and lo and behold, our water is bad. So that, to me, is proof. These are not small things. The gas companies saying, yeah, they're spinning it. They're saying, oh, you've never proven this. But what they're not saying is, oh, yes, well, we happen to be under investigation of Congress.
Referring to Congress's consideration of a bill titled the Frack Act, which would amend the Safe Drinking Water Act and give the Environmental Protection Agency authority over fracking. Companies would also be required to disclose chemicals used, which now are a trade secret. In his quest for empirical evidence, Josh Fox meets with a handful of independent scientists studying frack effluent. And in the film, he will occasionally recite their litanies of chemicals, in this case, found to be exuding from natural gas pipeline condensates, silently and invisibly vented into the atmosphere.
The results read sort of like the back of a pamphlet that you don't want to pick up at the American Cancer Society. These chemicals include benzene, dimethyl disulfide, methyl ethyl disulfide, ethyl methyl ethyl disulfide, trimethyl benzene, diethyl benzene, methyl methyl ethyl benzene, tetra methyl benzene, naphthalene, 1, 2, 4, trimethylbenzene.
The film is deadly serious, but also fracked with dry humor. Fox, who resembles a smaller, kind of grungier version of Ira Glass, host of This American Life, is a funny guy. Plus, his film is pushed by an interesting score of 60s lounge tunes, eerie ambient music, and fretting banjo segues, skillfully performed by Fox himself. A key point in the film holds that a lack of federal control is forcing state agencies to pick up the regulatory slack, or leaving it to vested agencies like Fox says, the Arkansas Oil and Gas Commission.
A relatively aggressive state, for example, like New York, that might want to regulate this industry, they only have 17 inspectors. So what their conclusion was that we're going to pass a moratorium in the state Senate because we simply are overwhelmed. Now, that took an enormous act of political will on behalf of thousands and thousands of people in New York State and in New York City, petitioning the government to say, no, we don't want this. So in that state, their answer to lack of state regulation was, no, we're not doing this. In other places, it's like, all right, well, we're going to do it, but we know that we're not going to be able to monitor this adequately. And I do think that there's an enormous conflict of interest when you have something like an oil and gas commission overseeing the process, because they're the ones who are charged with actually developing the resource.
The Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality has no below-board jurisdiction over the 2,500 shale gas wells drilled so far on the Fayetteville Shale Play in Arkansas, estimated to increase sixfold over the next decade. And that's why Fox says he came here, to raise awareness. He was invited by the Clinton School of Public Service in Little Rock, his visit organized by Joyce Hale, president of the Washington County League of Women Voters, sponsored by Sierra Club and the Omni Center as well. Gasland screenings were held in rural Van Buren County and Fayetteville, where Fox invited Arkansas residents impacted by fracking to join him on stage. His final appearance was at the Clinton Presidential Library in Little Rock.
Since January at Sundance, I think I've crisscrossed America 9 times. At the end of the film, I talk about how there's my backyard, you know, which isn't my backyard anymore, that it actually belongs to everybody because I know that the water goes through there. But that actually became very true, that in doing this much moving around throughout these different, you know, places in the film, it has become this weird sensation of going to all these places, going all over America, seeing the drilling, talking to these people, becoming very good friends with all these folks who are in the same position. It does feel like one place. And the United States is an incredibly beautiful, amazing place. The people are incredible. So what's difficult about it is to watch that getting eaten up and for basically a profit.
Josh Fox says now that the Obama administration's looking to overhaul offshore drilling practices, it's time to look inland.
You know, when we talked about onshore drilling in Alaska, in the wildlife preserve, people went nuts. But we're doing onshore drilling all over America right now, and it's this huge upswing of it in the last 5 years, and still I think there's a lot of awareness yet to come.
Brought by people in this film like West Divide Creek, Colorado resident Lisa Bracken, who describes a life utterly disrupted by fracking.
The corporate business model is to come into an area, develop it as fast as you can, and if you trash anything, you make the people who you impact prove it, you make them argue it in a court of law, and the last person standing gets bought off and you move on.
Josh Fox says he plans to screen his film wherever shale gas is being prospected and extracted, including Western Europe and Australia. And his next film project will take him across the proverbial shale gas bridge into America's energy future. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
And as we noted in our introduction about Fox's film Gasland, there have been criticisms of some of the contents of the movie. The ANGA, that is America's Natural Gas Alliance, says a much talked about moment in the film, when tap water is lit on fire, was not caused by drilling for natural gas. In a statement, the ANGA says the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, which tested Mike Markham's water in 2008 at his request, said methane in his water supply had no indications of oil and gas-related impacts to water well and was rather a result of the water drill being bored into a natural gas pocket. The statement also challenges another image in the movie that could leave viewers with the indication a fish kill was linked to natural gas drilling. An investigation into that incident by the Environmental Protection Agency blamed a sudden bloom of golden algae, which the EPA says it has not been able to determine the origin of. That same statement also says the ANGA member companies understand and respect people's concerns about the safety of their water and air and are committed to engaging in dialogue with community members, policymakers, and stakeholders to talk about the safety of natural gas production and the opportunities natural gas offers communities across the country. This is Ozarks at Large. Tonight, two artists will discuss their work at the Fayetteville Underground Art Gallery on the Fayetteville Square. Ozarks at Large's Ithi Ignihotri Madulkar visited the gallery to get a preview of tonight's talk, and she met with one of the artists, Greg Moore.
I've got something that I want to show you over in the... Let's go over there.
Gregory Moore walks through a maze of different shapes and sizes of metal sheets and objects. It is in these rusted and stained metal objects that he finds inspiration to revive and reinvent.
I've been painting on found objects for the past 2 years. I've been looking around, going around town, checking out dumpsters, going to recycling centers, going to salvage yards and scrap yards, just looking around in meadows, getting stuff and painting on it. So I like the look of rusted metal, and I like what happens when I paint a picture of thistles or flowers or cats or birds.
Gregory Moore's art is about reclaiming rusted, dented, or stained metal surfaces and painting on them in a way that their color and texture guide the artwork. Moore says that the idea to paint on such surfaces evolved on its own.
Sort of developed slowly. It was like something that I just did for fun. There was like a cool piece of metal in the backyard and I just painted on it. It was just going to be like a fun little, it wasn't, and then it just sort of developed slowly from there over a couple of years.
And as if the rusted and stained surfaces weren't interesting enough, the artist says one of the most interesting surfaces he has worked on is one which nobody would think of as a piece of art.
I think this piece is pretty interesting right here. This is an elevator console that I found in a dumpster around town, and I thought it was really cool. I just looked inside of a dumpster, and it was there. So now I can't pass by a dumpster without looking inside just to see. So I thought, like, pairing it with some dogwood blossoms would make an interesting contrast. I think the fact that the elevator console is kind of old-looking, it feels a little bit claustrophobic. You get the picture of like sort of an old elevator, but then sort of this like fresh outdoor feeling of the blossom sort of makes a good contrast.
Moore says that the knobs and switches of the old elevator console represent a period of time which fascinates him. Some of his other works too tell a story of their own.
Same thing maybe with these shelves. Sort of like you get a sense of where they used to be, maybe in a garage or something. I actually found these in the back of a dry cleaning place, just sort of out there. And then like the pans give a different feeling, you know. It's like somebody's kitchen.
Some of his pieces include a praying mantis on an old machinery lid cover and some chair seats with flowers painted on them. Moore says he mostly trusts his intuition to decide on which image to paint on a metal surface.
So more and more, like, I've been just looking at the piece of metal, this is as I develop, and just try to decide what goes on it, sort of more intuitively. So, like, this is a really good example of that, because I was just looking at this piece of metal, and then the image of the seagulls just came out of it, because it looked like maybe the ocean from above to me. So I thought, like, seagulls, yeah.
Gregory Moore's recent works include works of art with weeds, wildflowers, cats, birds, fishes, or insects on them.
Well, it's different each time. And like this one right here, for instance, it's going to be a fish. A goldfish, probably. And I've got some sketches right here of goldfish that will probably go on here. And I think it's because I had another one like this that was just exactly like this that I did a fish on, and it worked really well. So, and maybe because of the blue color, and just because, like, I'm interested in doing a goldfish. This right here is elephants, because somebody wanted me to paint elephants, so I'm in the middle of this one. And this one right here is some more of these dogwoods because somebody wanted me to. So I do commissions, and people ask me, they say, I need an elephant. So I do. And the cats were cats because of where I found this piece of metal. There were cats around it, so I was like, I should put cats on there.
But Moore does admit that sometimes inspiration and intuition elude him, leaving him clueless about what to do with a metal surface.
But then I often don't know. Like, I just got these three new pieces that I'm really excited about. I love it when they have words on it already. And these three gas cans that, I don't know what's going to go on there. And I'm not sure when I'll know. So meanwhile, I'll work on something else until I know.
The artist says that he wants his art to be understood by people of all backgrounds who can appreciate the reinvention of old discarded junk into beautiful pieces of art. The Fayetteville Underground Art Talk being hosted at the Fayetteville Underground Art Gallery today is an opportunity for him and another Fayetteville artist, Lilani Law, to talk about their artwork and art in general.
Well, we have our first Thursday openings every month, and it's a big sort of reception, and a lot of people are down here, and it can be really just big. And so I wanted to have something later on in the month that sort of lets people know that we're still open and bring people down here, maybe a little more low key, have some snacks and some wine, and I can just talk to people about what I'm doing, and I want to show them examples of the kind of metal that I paint on before I paint on it, give them an example of, or just talk about how I come up with the imagery that I'm going to paint on it.
Lilani Law, another artist being featured at the Fayetteville Underground Art Talk today evening, has helped put together an exchange with an art collective from Seattle called Shift. The exhibit called Continental Shift will be discussed by Lilani. Apart from the art talk today evening, Fayetteville Underground has other initiatives that can be of interest to the artists and art lovers of Fayetteville.
We have 4 new art shows every month. And we have these four studio or gallery spaces that we fill with new work, and we have we open up first Thursdays every month for a reception of that, and then we're open throughout the week.
The Fayetteville Underground Art Talk will be hosted at Fayetteville Underground, 1 East Center Street, tonight at 6:30. For more information, please log on to their website www.fayettevilleunderground.com. For Results at Large, this is Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
Greg Moore, the artist Iffy spent time with at the Fayetteville Underground recently, also can be heard as well as seen. He's part of the band Hosta, and we're listening to right now the band song Fever Dreams. You can learn more about the band Hosta at their MySpace page or at their Facebook page. This is Ozarks at Large.
Again Never is a tune by Branford Marsalis, who was born on this date in 1960 in Louisiana. Branford is the oldest of 4 brothers, all of whom are jazz musicians, along with their father Ellis. This innovative saxophonist studied at Southern University in Berkeley before beginning his professional career with Art Blakey's Big Band in 1980. In 1984, he released his first album, Scenes in the City. He joined his brother Winton's group a couple years later, but left in 1985 to play in Sting's backup band, as well as to tour with Miles Davis. In 1986, Marsalis formed his own group with pianist Kenny Kirkland, bassist Bob Hurst, and drummer Jeff Tane Watts. Marsalis became a national celebrity in 1992 when he signed on to be musical director for Jay Leno's Tonight Show, a job which lasted only until 1995. With the intent of combining jazz and hip-hop, the musician formed the Buckshot LaFunk Project shortly thereafter. The Grammy Award-winning musician is also a music producer, writer, and performer of film scores, and a member of the music faculty at San Francisco State and Michigan State Universities. He has also been recording steadily for Columbia since 1983. The first classes for East Arkansas Community College opened in a temporary facility in Forest City on this date in 1974. The majority of current EACC students are non-traditional. In addition to the more than 1,500 regular students as of 2007, hundreds of area residents of all ages participate in non-credit community education courses each year. The Business and Industry Training Program at the college provides quality employee performance, technology, and work environment solutions for area businesses and industries to increase their capacity for expansion and growth. Major League Baseball was televised for the first time on this date in 1939 when experimental station W2XBS broadcast a doubleheader between the visiting Cincinnati Reds and the Brooklyn Dodgers. Red Barber was the announcer. The Reds won the first game 5-2, while the Dodgers won the second game 6-1. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It's Thursday, August 26, 2010. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, the entertainment section found on Fridays in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
And you know, we asked some of our readers a while back about the best place to get free stuff in Northwest Arkansas. And the answer was Razor Bash. And that's today on campus, 11 to 3, on the Union Mall. And it's where businesses and churches and organizations like the Society for Creative Anachronism come and strut their stuff and recruit and give away free stuff.
What kind of free stuff can I get?
I've heard that you can get discs so you can play disc golf.
Well, there you go. All right.
And many other things, and you can find out more until 3 o'clock today on the Union Mall. Tonight's also an underground art talk with Fayetteville underground artists Gregory Moore and Leilani Law at 6:30 at
the
Underground, and it's free. The Golden Years of Radio is tonight.
That's right.
Hosted by Neely Jones and her husband Greg Beatty, featuring her dad and his troupe, the Route 66 Playhouse from Tulsa. They will do an old-time radio show at the Rogers Little Theater.
Right.
And they will have lots of yummy things, heavy hors d'oeuvres and desserts prepared by the Northwest Arkansas Community College culinary arts students. The show's a benefit for NWAC scholarships. And tickets are $50 for floor seats, $40 for balcony seats. Yes, you do get food if you sit in the balcony, I ask. And you can find out more at 619-4321. And Candy Lee.
Yes, her new CD release party is tonight.
At
Smoke and Barrel.
There you go. Titled The Gate. And admission to the 8 p.m. show is free.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
And so, you know, you can do a lot tonight without spending a nickel, or you can go spend some money and help out a scholarship fund.
And tomorrow, a brand new edition of What's Up in the newspaper.
Yes, and I'd love to tell you what it's about, but it's a secret.
Okay, well, we'll have to wait till tomorrow. Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found tomorrow in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. This is Ozarks Large for Thursday, August 26, 2010. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is P.J. Hrabowski, host of Film Score Friday every Friday morning on KUAF. Welcome back.
Thank you, Kyle.
We always talk the day before to give a preview of Film Score Friday, and you have selected a score. Now, I don't know if the score is one of my favorites of all time, but the movie certainly is.
Well, the score isn't one of those types of scores that you would walk around humming. It's just very different.
And this movie, of course, is
The Maltese Falcon.
I love this. Humphrey Bogart.
1941. Now, I chose this because, number one, I love the movie. And I really like the film score composer, Adolph Deutsch. It was the directorial debut of John Huston,
who went on to many, many classics.
Yeah. It was the first A movie for Humphrey Bogart.
Really catapulted him to household name status.
Right. And at first, we didn't even know it was going to be an A movie. Mm-hmm. And then it was the first movie for 61-year-old Sidney Greenstreet. At the same time, you have this twisty, compelling story that holds up reasonably well and has for the past 69 years. Of course, a great story written by Dashiell Hammett.
Right.
But it was actually the third time the movie had been made, the only time it had been successful. Now, Warner Brothers bought the rights to The Maltese Falcon in 1930, which was the same year the book was published, and they paid $8,500 for the rights and produced two versions of it in the next 6 years. The first one in 1931 portrayed Sam Spade as a real playboy, more of a playboy than a hard-nosed tough guy. And it bombed. Okay, this 5 years later, it was released under the title Satan Met a Lady. And it was a comedy which starred Betty Davis as the femme fatale. And it bombed. And it had Betty Davis. How does that happen? Okay. But the third time, you had a movie with a first-time director, Huston, a B-movie actor, Humphrey Bogart, contract players, a short shooting schedule, and the direction of Hollywood was changed forever. I mean, this was the beginning of film noir.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by the time The Maltese Falcon arrived, audiences had been used to a certain kind of private eye. Usually somebody with lots of money, who cooperated with the police, didn't like to get his hands dirty. Good example, The Thin Man.
Yes.
Also
yes.
Of Hammett property.
Mm-hmm.
And The Maltese Falcon, you have Sam Spade, who's kind of an anti-hero with a penchant for fast dialogue and fast women. Well, he'll do anything to make a buck and is likable because of his frankness about the world and his role in it. He doesn't carry a gun, but he isn't afraid to use one if presented the opportunity. Now, this was not how movie detectives were expected to act before 1941. Now, Adolph Deutsch was born in London in 1897, and he began playing the piano when he was 5 years old, and it was discovered when he was seven that he had perfect pitch. Well, he started at the Royal Academy of Music in London when he was eight and was already receiving awards for composition. I know. What were you doing when you were eight, Kyle?
Not receiving awards for anything.
I wasn't either. In the 30s, he was orchestrating and conducting musicals for George Gershwin and Irving Berlin. He won three Academy Awards, one for Some Like It Hot, one for great movie The Apartment, and The Arrangement of Oklahoma. Now, the original soundtrack for Maltese Falcon didn't survive. The best source of listening comes from the dynamic duo of Morgan and Stromberg, who recorded and restored parts of the score for their 2002 Marco Polo recording, which is what we'll be hearing. And as far as we know, the written score was given to the University of Wyoming, so maybe someday somebody will take on the huge task of a new recording, which would be cool. But in 2010, we have roughly 14 minutes of material from the score with the Moscow Symphony Orchestra. That's it. That's all you're going to find. At the beginning of the movie, you have the Warner fanfare.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he had Max Steiner do the fanfare, but this time he had him do it in B-flat instead of the original key of C to give it kind of that darker flavor of, you know, the movie.
We'll be right back.
even though this is primarily a serious, hard-boiled film, you still find moments of subtle humor. And Deutsch was quick to score the proper type of music for these moments. In fact, there's a scene called The Deal, where Sam Spade, remember where he's drugged?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay, well, in this scene, there's this excellent example of the wonderful underscore of Adolph Deutsch. You'll hear this disturbing dissonance, and then an excellent use of the timpani and percussion, lower register keys on the piano, and a reinstatement of the main theme using the oboe and the brass. The impressive thing about these tracks is that Adolph Deutsch, due to budget limitations for a movie that we didn't know was going to turn out this wonderful, he had to use a much smaller orchestra, but it didn't take away from the effectiveness of the tracks at all. And the final track, which is called Endcast, they included this music just for fun.
Oh, okay.
It was just kind of you're going. It's kind of a little bit jazzy, and you're going, "What's this?" And John Huston said, "Yeah, let's use it, just for fun."
Maltese Falcon, and what else tomorrow?
We have music from The Dish, The Queen.
Mm-hmm, I like that movie.
Red River, John Wayne movie. City Lights.
Chaplin.
Right. Meet Joe Black. And A Perfect Murder, which is based on Dial M for Murder.
Okay. That's all tomorrow on Film Score Friday from 10 until noon on KUAF 91.3 FM. PJ, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kyle.
What is it?
The stuff that dreams are made of.
This is Ozarks at Large, Garrison Keillor, and today's Writer's Almanac just ahead. One of the oldest television stations in all of the state, KATV Channel 7 in Little Rock, is beginning a transfer of decades worth of historic video into the State Library for preservation. The collection, consisting of 24,000 hours of tape, was donated last year to the Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History at the University of Arkansas. Senator David Pryor says the material deserves to be in an archival quality facility.
There's nothing like this collection in this country. There's nothing that resembles what we have here today. This treasure that we're going to share with many, many thousands and thousands of people for this and other generations yet to come.
The videos in the collection date back to 1950 and will be digitized in the years to come at the State Library. The Fulbright College Department of Music will feature Janice Yeo's and Mark Smith in a recital tonight beginning at 7:30 in the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall on the University of Arkansas campus. Janice Yeo's is in her 25th year as a vocal instructor at the U of A Department of Music. Mark Smith, a longtime piano instructor at the Suzuki Music School. Tonight's performance is free. The public's invited. If you'd like more information, you can call 575-4701 or online music.uark.edu. And Saturday, Hobbs State Park will hold its annual Volunteer Roundup Open House with an opportunity for area outdoor enthusiasts to find out how they can volunteer at the park. It's Saturday afternoon from 2 until 4 at the Hobbs Visitor Center. That's on Highway 12 east of Rogers. For more information, 789-5009. Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of the region's history and culture. Tomorrow night on Shades of Jazz on KUAF, the music of Abby Lincoln will be featured during the entire first hour of the program. Long recognized as one of jazz's most arresting and uncompromising singers, Lincoln died earlier this month in Manhattan. Join Robert Ginsberg at 10 o'clock tomorrow night for Shades of Jazz here on your source for jazz, KUAF 91.3 FM. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Bentonville, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 25 years. You can listen to us for free at our website, KUAF.com. And KUAF and Theater Squared invite you to register for Theater Squared's fifth season celebration giveaway. One lucky winner will receive two 2010 season subscriptions, which will feature Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps, Every Christmas Story Ever Told, and Then Some, Sundown Town, and Reasons to Be Pretty. You'll also be treated to dinner for two at Ella's Restaurant, plus a two-night weekend stay at the Inn at Carnell Hall in Fayetteville. The drawing will be held Friday, September 3rd, during Film Score Friday with P.J. Grabowski. You can find more information and register at KUAF.com. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Thanks so much for tuning in. Tomorrow at noon, a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. And included in tomorrow's edition, a preview of the first ever Fayetteville Roots Music Festival taking place Sunday. One of the artists that will be performing at the Fayetteville Roots Festival is Raina Rose. We'll end today's program with a song from Raina Rose. This is titled Desdemona. Until tomorrow, have a great Thursday.